call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. It's 4 minutes after nine. Present today are co-chairman Senator Stedman, Senator Dyson, Senator Thomas, and Senator Elton. I'd like to remind everybody that they need to keep their cell phones off for today's hearings. And today we have an overview of the Department of Education and Early Development on Alaska's public school funding program. We have with us Mr. Eddie Jeans with the department. He's here to lead us through this somewhat complex funding mechanism. Questions that members may have regarding this, they can go ahead and ask them as the presentation is being presented. Materials that are provided to the committee include two items: the Alaska Public School Funding Formula Overview, and we're going to have a PowerPoint presentation on that item, as well as the second one, which addresses the student-based formula elements. Additional funding, funds above the basic need for the 2008 projected entitlement. So are there any questions? We have been joined by Senator Huggins. Any questions before we proceed of any of the members? Senator Stedman?
No. Senator Wilkins.
But we have been also joined by Senator Wilkins. Welcome. So please proceed, Mr. Jeans.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm having some technical difficulties right now because it's not being projected. I think your staff is working on that.
Take a brief at ease while we... Come back to order. We have the technical difficulties worked out here, and again, Mr. Eddie Jeans, the Department of Education, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have a very good staff because they figured it out for us. My name is Eddie Jeans. I'm the Director of School Finance for the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development. And today, Mr. Chairman, we're going to provide you with an overview of the public school funding program. In your handouts, you should have two documents. One is a printout of the slideshow, and I believe there's three slides per page with some lines for you to take notes on. And then the other document is a public school funding program overview updated January 2007. And I would encourage you and the members of the Finance Committee to share this document with your staff. I or any of my staff can answer just about any question about the foundation program utilizing that document. And Mr. Chairman, as you mentioned earlier, if you or members have questions as we proceed through this, please stop me at that point and we'll address those questions then. So with that, Mr. Chairman, the current public school funding formula was adopted under Senate Bill 36 in 1998. It was implemented for the first year in 1999. And the public school funding formula is defined in Alaska Statute 1417. This presentation will provide an overview of the calculations of adjusted average daily membership Many of you can think of this as the student count. Calculation's a basic need, so how do we calculate the entitlement of school districts? Once we calculate the entitlement, who's going to pay for that entitlement? Then there are additional funds above basic need, and then we'll discuss the components of state aid. First, Mr. Chairman, the average daily membership is a 20-day count that ends the fourth Friday in October. It's based on the number of students that are enrolled in the school during that count period. So if a child enrolls halfway through, that child would count as a half FTE or full-time equivalent. If they're enrolled the full 20 days, they're counted as a full-time equivalent. The reports are due to us within 2 weeks after the end of the count period. We also collect projected student count data for the upcoming school year at that time, and that's what we utilize to build our budget request that comes before you. Who qualifies as a student?
Mr. Chair, question on the...
Senator Huggins.
Any question on the November 5th projection? Let's say the school district changes their projection. Does that change your budget, or do you just let it ride it from the initial projection?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, we let it ride from the initial projections. Otherwise, we'd be updating the foundation projections throughout the entire legislative session.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Who qualifies as a student who's eligible for state foundation funding? A child who is 6 years of age before September 1 and is under the age of 20 and has not completed the 12th grade is eligible for foundation funding. A child who is 5 years of age before September 1 following the beginning of the school year may enter kindergarten. And Mr. Chairman, that terminology is a little confusing because the school year actually runs from July 1st through June 30, just like the fiscal year, but schools are only required to operate 180 days during that 12-month period. So a child with a disability that has an active IEP or individual education program can enter school at the age of 3 and can receive services through the age of 22. There are 5 steps to calculating the district's adjusted ADM or average daily membership. And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to speak to each one of these individually, but we'll just go through them real quickly here. First adjustment has to do with the adjustment for school size. The second adjustment is the district cost factors. The third adjustment is 20% block funding for special needs. The fourth adjustment is an addition for intensive students. And the last adjustment is for correspondence students. And once we go through all these calculations, we total those up for the district and we arrive at what we call the district's adjusted average daily membership. The first step in calculating or determining how we're going to calculate the school size adjustment, we have to look at the student population within each individual community. And the law tells us that if there's 10 to 100 students in a community, we're going to fund that school as if there's one building. If there's 101 through 425 students in a community, we're going to fund them as if there's 2 schools being operated. And we simply split the student population into K-6 and 7-12, and we run both of those through the calculations, and we'll get to that in just a minute. And then the last one is, if a community has more than 425 students, each one of the schools that is administered separately gets to go through the funding size adjustment as an independent school. The exception to that rule is alternative schools, and those are, if they have less than 200 students, then the law tells us to add it to the school population that's largest in the district. Typically, those are high schools. If they have over 200 students in an alternative program, then that school itself gets to count as an independent school. Charter schools, you have to have over 150 students to count as an independent school as well. Mr. Chairman, at the top of that slide, you'll see it says ADM under 10. you'll see in just a minute when we get to the slide, we don't provide funding for a school fewer than 10. And so what the law tells us to do is add that to the next smallest school in the district for funding purposes. Mr. Chairman, today I'd like to use Nome Public Schools as the example. We'll walk through the entire calculations of their foundation funding. You can see here the Nome, they have the Nome Belt or Nome Elementary School. They have the Nome Belts Junior Senior High School. There's the Anvil City Science Academy, which is their charter school. And then they have the Nome Youth Detention Facility. Mr. Chairman, we have about 10 detention facilities, youth detention facilities around the state. We do fund each one of those as a separate site because the districts are basically providing educational services under a contractual arrangement with the department for those facilities. So the total average daily membership for the Nome Public Schools is 798 students. The arrow drawn from the charter school, Anvil City Science Academy, up to the elementary school is telling us because they have fewer than 150 students, we're going to add that to the largest school in the district, and in this case it happens to be the elementary school. So as I just mentioned, that's what the slide says. Because they're under 150, we're going to move them up to the largest school. Mr. Chairman, here's the school size adjustment table that is set in statute. I'd like to point out a few things quickly before we move through the actual calculations. But you can see up here on reference line number one, it has a range of 10 to 19.99. And over here under formula, it says we're going to fund that as if they have 39.6 students. That 39.6 gets carried down to the next range. And for every student above 20, the formula tells us we're going to award the district 1.62. So the formula is whatever the ADM is above 20, or 20 minus 20, we'd multiply that times 1.62, and we would add that to the 39.6. If you had exactly 30 students, they would generate 55.80. And for every student above 30, we're going to fund them for 1.49 for each additional student. You can see in that column there, we go from 1.62, 1.49, 1.27. That adjustment is getting smaller as the student population gets larger. And that's to adjust for economies of scale, Mr. Chairman. And you can imagine as the student population gets larger, we achieve some efficiencies and therefore the cost per child goes down. Here's the elementary school for Nome. You may remember we added the 44 to the 400, so we subtract 444 from 400. We'll give you 44 students. We multiply that times 0.92, which will give you 40.48. The 40.48 is then added to the 471.6 to give you an adjusted average daily membership for the elementary school of 512 students. At the high or 7 through 12 or high school level, junior high school, the population is 340 students. Here again, we look up on our table and we find the formula for that. It tells us to subtract 250 from the 340, which will give you 90 students. We multiply that times the 0.97, which will give you 87.3. That is added to the 326 to get you to the 413.40. And then as I mentioned earlier, Mr. Chairman, the detention facility will be funded as a separate school. In this case, they have 14 students there, and that gets the base allocation of 39.6. So we add the 512.08 to the 413 to the 39, and we'll arrive at 965 adjusted for school site or school size. The next step in the formula is to apply the area cost differential. Area cost differentials range from 1.0 to 1.736. Nome's happens to be 1.319. So we take the school size adjusted ADM of 965, We multiply that times 1.319 to arrive at the 1,272. The next adjustment is to adjust for special needs. It's a 20% block funding. It's to assist school districts with their special education programs, with the exception of the intensive needs students, to assist with vocational education, gifted, talented, and bilingual, bicultural. School districts had to submit a plan to the department indicating how they were going to provide these special needs services. They all met that requirement in 1999. So you can see here, we take the previous product of 1,272, multiply that times 1.20, which is the special needs block funding, to arrive at 1,527. The next step is to add the adjustment for intensive service students. This is a one-day head count on the last day of the count period. Students that are requiring intensive need services have to have an IEP in place. They have to meet 7 criteria that are outlined in department regulation. An intensive need service student generates $26,900. Mr. Chairman, it's important to understand that these students start at the very beginning. They're reported in the school that they attend, so they go through the size adjustment, the cost factor, the special needs. Then we provide an additional $26,900 on top of that to support these children.
We have a question here from Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Eddie, is this the issue that I just heard about in the news in Anchorage?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, this is the issue that you've heard about in the news, not only in Anchorage, but in Mattsu, Fairbanks. Juneau will be, I'm assuming, in a similar situation. But what happened was the legislature provided us funding about 2 years ago to do a statewide audit of all the intensive claims across the state. The reason that the legislature did that was prior to that funding, because of our limited staff, when we got into the larger school districts, we would do a random sample. For example, we would go into Anchorage and we would look at 20 students. And we would determine maybe 5 of those students were not eligible for funding. We held Anchorage accountable for those 5 students. We did not hold them accountable for 25% of their claim. So by going out and doing a full-fledged 100% audit, the districts are being held accountable for 100% of their claim for intensive funding. It is an issue out there. People are concerned. School districts may imply that the department has changed the rules. I would counter that we have not changed the rules. What we have done is changed the way we monitor. And what we're finding is there were a number of students that were being funded under this category that were not eligible for this funding.
Mr. Chair, if I could just, and please don't, you know, you don't need to feel like you need to answer now, but it would be interesting to me and perhaps to other members of the committee if you could provide some additional information on just how you did the monitoring and what the financial impact is on those districts that you have checked.
Well, through the chair, Senator Elton, I wouldn't mind addressing that a little bit right now. What we did was we hired a contractor to assist the department with the monitoring. The contractor spent time with the department staff to ensure that she understood how the department interpreted the regulation and applied the 7 criteria. Our contractor went out to the districts along with department staff and did the monitoring, and we determined there were a number of students that were not eligible. We did not ask for funding back in that first go around. It was more of a educational type of review so that the districts understood how those regulations were going to be applied. In our smaller school districts where there's a handful of intensive students, let's say 1 to 5, they were monitored every time our staff went out, 100% of their claim. So it was more of a fairness issue that all districts were being treated the same. I have to tell the committee, I would suggest that school districts have a different definition of intensive than we have. I really believe that's part of the issue here. But I believe that the when the legislature passed Senate Bill 36, they believed that the intensive needs category was your severely multi-handicapped children that require a full-time aid, and we're simply not finding that to be the case in a number of the claims.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Elton. Senator Paulson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are there any penalties out there for those school districts that are have numbers that, for lack of a better term, are biased in their favor, or for those that have a more lenient definition for some of these intensive students?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, that's exactly what Senator Elton was alluding to. We went through this process the first time with the school districts and did not ask for money back, but we were very clear in what we believed to be a valid claim. Now we're going through our second and third follow-up with school districts, and we are holding them accountable. We are saying if they are not eligible, you will not receive funding, and that's what has happened recently in Anchorage.
Not receive funding, though, is different than a penalty that's out there where you you point it out and then ask for either money back with interest or something like that. There's no mechanism for that. Is that what you're saying?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, we're not levying an interest against any of the claims, but one of the issues that has come to our attention is the review that we just went through for Anchorage was based on last year's claim. So we would be asking for money back from last year's claim, which has already been expended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
But Senator Olson, if I may, we are going to audit every single new intensive claim this year in the state. So
thank
that
you,
we're on.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Please proceed with your presentation.
Thank you. So in this case, you can see Nome Public Schools has four students that they've claimed for intensive funding. The formula tells us we're going to fund them at five times, which would give you a product of 20. We add that to the 1,527 to get you to 1,547. Districts that offer correspondence programs, they receive funding at 80% of the correspondence ADM. This, it doesn't matter if it's an in-district program or a statewide program or a combination of the two. All correspondents are funded at 80%. Each correspondent student generates $4,300. You can see here Nome has six students in their correspondence program at the 80% is 4.80. We add that to the previous product of 1,547 to get us to 1,552. The 1,552 is the district's adjusted average daily membership. After we've gone through the five steps, we multiply that times the base student allocation, which is currently set at 5,380, to come up with the district's basic need, which is 8,351,500. So to briefly recap, we started with the schools of 798 students. Once we went through the size adjustment, we had 965. We increased that by the cost differential to get us to 1,272. We increased that product by 20% to get us to 1,527. We added to that the 20 adjustment of 20 for intensive students to get us to 1,547. We add to that product the 4.80 for correspondence to get us to 1,552. And as I just mentioned, multiply that times the base student allocation to get the basic need. Mr. Chairman, basic need is what I was referring to as their entitlement. And now the next question is, who pays for basic need? There are three components that pay for basic need, and that's first is the required local contribution. The second is the federal impact aid. And then whatever's left over is the state aid, the state support for public schools. Under Senate Bill 174 that was passed in 2001, it basically told us to look at fiscal year 1999 as our base year for the full value determination and add to that half of the increase in the full value determination for the purposes of calculating required local effort. And so here's our example with Nome. You can see in 2006, their full value is set by the state assessor, Mr. Van Sant, is $252 million. Their 1999 full value was $191 million. The difference is $60 million, so half of that would be approximately $30 million. We add that to the $191, which was the 1999 full value, to arrive at what I call the education full value of $222 million for Nome. This is the number that the four mills is applied to, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to talk about this a little bit. Because of this calculation, when this provision was first passed back in 2001, the fiscal impact on the state was $3.6 million. So it was had a relatively low fiscal note or low impact. Going into the FY08 budget, this provision accounts for $50.5 million in the foundation program. And it's going to continue to grow, Mr. Chairman.
And basically, this is a reduction that the communities are accredited to because of the 174 allowing them to take the 50% of their increased valuation. And how are we going to defend a disparity test? Because I understand that there's even one district that is paying below 3 mills at present, and others are paying at four mills.
Mr. Chairman, that's a good question, and I'd like to respond to the first part. In terms of the federal disparity test, this provision does not have an impact on that equalization test. When this provision of law was passed, I asked the federal government if they had a problem with the way that we calculated required local effort. They said as long as the calculation was applied uniformly across the state, they did not have a problem with it. But I am suggesting that we may have a problem when it comes to taxpayers. And I'd like to give you an example of that, Mr. Chairman. The equivalent of a 1 mil levy on a $100,000 home would generate $100. In Bristol Bay, Lake and Pin, those are areas of our state that have been struggling economically, as most of you are aware. Their property value is set by the state assessor has actually been decreasing over the years. So they're still required to contribute to education 4 mils on their full and true value. That would equate to $400 on a $100,000 home. In areas of the state that are growing, such as Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, Matsu, and Matsu is the extreme. When you calculate what the mill equivalent is against the state assessor's full value, Matsu is required to contribute to education the equivalent of a 2.8 mil tax levy. So on a $100,000 home, the people in the Matsu Valley contribute $280 to education. That's what they're required to contribute. Now, I'm not suggesting that's all they contribute, but that's what they're required to contribute under the foundation funding formula. So you can see where we have areas in the state that are struggling economically. They still have to pay a higher contribution. Those that are growing actually get a discounted rate on their contribution.
We have a question here from Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Eddie, in light of what you've said, and I know you've said this to other committees here in the building previously this year, you've pointed out what you see as a growing disparity. I mean, the State Board has recommended, for example, the legislature back away from the 70% requirement. I mean, why hasn't the board or why isn't the governor coming forward with legislation to address the issue that you've just pointed out?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, it's a growing problem, but I can't say that the State Board has really taken a firm position on this issue. The 70-30 is one that requires them to review school district budgets and financials and make recommendations for waivers or levy a penalty. The law as it is written requires some feedback from the legislature, which the state board has not received, yet they take a lot of heat in granting those waivers on an annual basis. We believe that the state's accountability system for student achievement is a better way to measure how a school is spending their money versus this arbitrary 70% across the board for all schools. We've been able to identify a pattern. School districts that have a budget of $3 million or less, or have expenditures in their operation and maintenance of 20% or greater.
Mr. Chair, I didn't mean to lead us down a discussion on the 70-30, but I do recognize that I might be speaking against my community's best fiscal interest. But it does seem to me that if the governor is going to offer a goal of trying to remove $150 million from the operating budget, and we have a situation like this that has ballooned from $3 million plus to $50 million plus, that at some point we need to revisit the provision and make sure that we're treating all districts fairly and not giving a special benefit to some districts, including mine, I'd point out.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, the purpose of me raising this issue is to make the legislature aware of the growing disparity. I'm not suggesting that we go back to the $4 million required local effort. That the policy of the legislature may be to drop it to $3 million. And if you drop it to $3 million, that would actually provide additional resources to other communities around the state, including Juneau. I'm just simply saying we have a growing range in disparate treatment on the required local effort, and it's going to continue to grow if we allow this to move forward.
Thank you, Senator Elton. Senator Stidman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, there's two areas that concern me with this, the whole formula, one of which is the multiple on cost of doing business comparisons around the state, which are a little off. The other one is this millage issue, and if we just take a look at the Senate district I represent, we have Sitka paying 3.3 mils. Juneau is 3.2. So Sitka and Juneau are pretty close, 3.2. We've got Petersburg at 3.7 and Wrangell at 4. The financial health of those communities are ranked. Sitka's in the strongest fiscal position. Petersburg is second. Wrangell clearly is the weakest fiscal position of all the major communities in Southeast from virtually any measurement. And it's, you know, it's unfair to have a $4 million issue facing the citizens of Wrangell when you have a 3.3 mil issue facing the citizens of Sitka. And that's just in my own Senate district. I get the full spectrum. So I think there is definitely some inequities there that we need to balance at the table and have some discussions. But also, going from 3.6 million to 50.5 million, if we extrapolate that out at the growth for the last decade or 5 years or whatever numbers you want to use to get a 3 or 4 10-year projection, I think this is going to be an alarming situation where we're going to have our growing communities that are organized required to pay a very low millage rate, yet we have the areas that are economically struggling strapped. Now, there's the unorganized borough, unorganized areas, which we don't want the communities to head down. We want people in the organized areas and in the boroughs eventually, but according to the Constitution. So I think we get a multitude of areas here that point to, or multitude of directions that point to this is an issue that we need to address, and we need to treat citizens of the state fairly, regardless if they're in a community like Wrangell that has economic stagnation, or a community that is like Sitka that has growing economic values. We don't have population growth, but we have market value growth in that community. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think that's the exact testimony that Eddie Jeans gave in the example of Bristol Bay. Senator Stedman, thank you for your comments. Please proceed. Or do you have...
No, that's... I just thought I'd use my own district as a good comparison.
Thank you, Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So here on the next slide, we're going to calculate the required local effort for Nome. The foundation program requires us to apply the equivalent of a 4-mill tax levy on the education full value, or the district is capped at, the local contribution is capped at, or required local contribution, that is, at 45% of basic need for the prior year. Mr. Chairman, what that does is it basically sets a ceiling on the amount of money that school districts would have to contribute to education through the foundation program, and it would allow them to continue to receive some state aid through the foundation formula. So in this particular case, you can see that the 4 mills generates $889,000. The 45% of basic need would generate $3,600,000 or almost $700,000. So, Mr. Chairman, we do have three school districts in this state that are under the 45% provision. That would be North Slope, Valdez, and Skagway. And if you calculate what their required local effort is in a mill equivalent, all three of those communities are below the 4-mill requirement. In fact, North Slope is below 1 mill. But the cap is put in there to provide them with some state revenue to support public schools. So here again, this would be a policy decision for the legislature to make. If they didn't feel that the 45% was appropriate, the legislature could increase that to 50 or 60%. The legislature could drop that down to 35%. Clearly, it's strictly a policy call at that point.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Stedman.
Mr. Chairman, I think there's three areas of the state that this may impact.
Correct. North Slope, Valdez, and Skagway.
Okay, and could you kind of touch on Skagway? It seems to, obviously, North Slope and Valdez have a lot of impact with Trans-Alaska Pipeline and the oil industry. Skagway is a little odd.
Through the chair, I'm not, Senator Stedman, I'm not going to call Skagway odd, but they are an anomaly. Basically, what happens in Skagway, Mr. Chairman, is, as most of you know, it's a pretty booming community during the summer with the tourist season. So they do have a lot of wealth in Skagway, but after the tourist season is over, many of those folks leave, and they have a very small student population. They have, I believe it's right at 100 students. So their wealth, community wealth, compared to their student population is what's generating this anomaly in Skagway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Title 8, the Federal Impact Aid Program. We count federal impact aid that school districts receive from March 1 through the, or up till March 1. And then we also use the dates on the payment vouchers to indicate when the school districts actually received the payments. That's probably a little more technical than people want to know, but the payment voucher would be issued, and then the federal government transfers the money, and I can never tell when they actually receive the money, so I have to use the vouchers as my indicator. And real briefly, Mr. Chairman, the impact aid is the federal government's payment in basically in lieu of property taxes. You know, we have the military installations in Anchorage and Fairbanks. We have the Coast Guard base in Kodiak. And the people that live on those bases, their homes are non-taxable. So this is the federal government paying their basically their property tax or support for education. A big contributor in our state is the people that live on ANCSA lands, Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Those funds
Those lands also generate these additional funds through the Impact Aid program. Mr. Chairman, we receive on a statewide basis somewhere between $110 and $120 million in federal impact aid each year. There are some additional, included in that are some what they call add-on, what Impact Aid calls add-on funds. And that would be funds for special education children, a little bit of money for construction. But the big one is there's a 25% add-on for people that reside on native lands. We cannot count those monies in our state funding formula. So when we start with $110 million in federal impact aid and we back out those add-ons, what the state gets to consider in its funding formula is about $80 million. And then there's, I'm going to show you another calculation we have to go through that actually drops that down to about $55 million, almost $56 million that we count as, I call it a local effort, other people don't, in the foundation formula. So you can see school districts receive on a statewide basis about $110 million. We're only going to count in our state funding formula about half of that. In the case of Nome Public Schools, after we back out their add-ons, they're left with about $86,000 that we can count in our state funding formula. And as I mentioned,
Senator Olson.
Before we go on, when we're talking about Title VIII money, why is it that the impact aid, where you're surrounded by federal lands, are not able to be counted as a local contribution? What's the reason for that?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the federal government has removed those lands from the option of the local government to tax those lands. So they're non-taxable due to federal action.
I understand that, but why does the state not count that impact aid as a part of local contribution? Because that land obviously can't be developed, so it can be taxed.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I consider the impact aid a local contribution. So when we get to the final adjustments here, I'll show you in just a moment. We start with the entitlement, basic need, and there's two deducts. Mm-hmm. And I really consider both of them a local contribution deduct. One from the local taxpayers that you can levy taxes against, one that comes from the federal government because we cannot levy taxes. And then whatever's left over is your state aid.
Mr. Chairman, I just under the misunderstanding that impact aid was not considered a local contribution by the state. Is that not true?
But through the chair, Senator Olson, I think that's a depends on who you talk to. If you're asking me, I consider it a local contribution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under the Impact Aid program, it says that if you have a required local contribution in your state and you allow districts to contribute something above that requirement, then you have to calculate what that ratio is and you have to extend it to Impact Aid. So here again is further evidence, or I believe is evidence, why we consider Impact Aid a local revenue. So in the case of Nome, their required local contribution is $889,000. Their budgeted local revenue is $1.9 million. That gives us a ratio of 46%. So Impact Aid says before you go and deduct whatever the state says you're going to deduct, Nome is going to get a benefit for making an additional local contribution over what they were required, and we're going to extend that benefit over to the Impact Aid. So you can see here, we start with the $85,000. We deduct we multiply that times 46%, and then we multiply that times 90%. The 90% is the amount that the legislature determined that the state would consider in the foundation formula. And that leaves us at a result of 53,000 or almost, $36,000. Of impact aid that would be deducted through the foundation formula. So I think this is where I get to Senator Olson's question. We start with the basic need. We have two deducts, and they're both for a contribution to education, one from a local taxpayer and one that comes through the impact aid program, because you cannot tax those lands. And then what's left over is the state aid. There are additional funds above basic need. Municipalities, Mr. Chairman, I need to back up just a couple slides. For the regional education attendance areas, you would not have this 46% calculation. For REAAs, we simply take 85,000 times 90%, because they have no required local contribution in our state funding formula. So for those unorganized areas, we do deduct 90% of their federal impact aid. Okay, we do have additional funds above basic need, and as I mentioned, that's additional local contribution, quality school grants, and supplemental funding floor. The law tells us that if you're in a municipal school district, you can contribute the greater of the 2 mil, the equivalent of a 2 mil tax levy, or 23% of your district's basic need. Mr. Chairman, the rule is, if you're required to contribute 4 mils, your district is going to be allowed to contribute 23% of basic need. The districts that fall under the 2 mil additional local contribution would be those that I mentioned have the 45% required local effort, which is North Slope, Valdez, and Skagway. So you can see here for Nome, 23% of basic need clearly exceeds the 2 mil calculation of $500,000. So we take the required local effort of $889,000, we add to that the additional local contribution of $1.9 million to come up with the maximum local contribution that Nome could make to public schools of $2.8 million. And I think you remember on the slide previously, they were contributing at $1.9 million. We have the quality schools grants. Those are outlined in Alaska Statute 1417-480. Tells us to take the district's adjusted ADM and multiply that times $16. Mr. Chairman, districts have to apply for these funds. All districts do apply for them. Typically, they're using these funds for remedial programs, after-school tutoring, those types of activities. The supplemental funding floor. What is the floor? How was it established, and how is it adjusted? Mr. Chairman, this is a part of Senate Bill 36, basically required us to calculate the difference between the two funding formulas in 1999. And if you qualified for more money under the previous formula, you received that money in the first year, and we called that the supplemental funding floor. It was intended to provide transition between the old and new funding formula. Here's a brief example. Say under the old formula you qualified for $1.1 million in 1999, but under Senate Bill 36 you were entitled to $1 million. The difference there is $100,000, and that became your funding floor. You can see here we did the actual calculation for Nome, and their funding floor in fiscal year 1999 was $110,000. Adjustments to the floor, they're all reductions. They're intended, the floor is intended to erode away. There are two adjustments that can occur. One is if you have an increase in basic need, and typically that will occur if you have an increase in student population, or there's increases in the base student allocation, as the legislature has done in the past 4 years. Or if you have a decrease in your average daily membership over FY99, you would also have your floor adjusted. I'm just going to skip these real quick, Mr. Chairman. Here's Nome Public Schools. You can see that their funding floor was established in 1999 at $110,000. In fiscal year 2000, they did not have any change in their basic needs, so they got to retain their floor in fiscal year 2000. In fiscal year 2001, though, they had an increase in their basic need over the prior year. 40% of that increase represented $14,500. So we subtract that from the $110,000, and their funding floor for fiscal year 2001 was $95,000. Again, in 2002, the district really had no change in their basic needs, so there was no adjustment. But moving to fiscal year 2003, they had an increase in their basic need. 40% of that increase represented $73,000. We subtracted that from the $95,000, so their funding floor in fiscal year 2003 was $22,500. In fiscal year 2004, they had another increase in their basic need, again because the base student allocation went up. 40% of that increase was $49,000. That exceeded the amount that they had remaining on the floor. So now in 2004, NOM had fully transitioned to the new funding formula. Simply remember that all adjustments to the floor are reductions. If you have an increase over the prior year, we're going to reduce that, take 40% of that increase and subtract it from the floor. Mr. Chairman, we only have 10 school districts that are on the supplemental funding floor projected in fiscal year 08, and that supplemental funding floor is less than $1 million now. You can see here for NOM, their state aid was $7.4 million. They have no supplemental funding floor. Their quality schools grants is $24,000. So they will receive from the state of Alaska $7,451,000 based on their 08 projections. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, if for some reason the legislature doesn't provide sufficient funding in the foundation program to cover all the entitlements, we would simply prorate everybody's entitlement by the same percentage.
Thank you, Mr. Jeans. We did hear the bells for calling us to session, but we do have time for a couple of short questions. Do we have any questions from the members of the committee? Senator, please proceed.
Okay, I'll pass, thanks.
Senator Dyson, you pass. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Jeans, can you just tell us what the situation is for homeschool students, whether they're either adjusted for the local school districts or whether there is any kind of compensation that the state can give the school district for those students?
And through the chair, Senator Olson, homeschool families that enroll in our correspondence programs are funded as if they're a correspondence student.
At the full rate?
At the 0.80.
Oh, 0.808.
Okay. So they generate $4,300, I believe it was.
Okay. The last question, Mr. Chairman, is NOM is a first-class city. As you look at other communities throughout and has its own tax, local tax, property taxes, as you look at other school districts that are on, how is that adjusted to, or how? What's the corresponding, say, between other school districts throughout the state?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, all first-class cities and unified municipalities, which would include your boroughs, mm-hmm. are required to make the $4 million contribution based on the adjusted assessed value as required under Senate Bill 174. Clearly, as we went through this little exercise, different communities have varying property wealth, and so that's going to dictate how much they're required to contribute to education.
So as I look at some place like Tanana, or which is the how is it adjusted for that? What's the differences?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, Tanana is a first-class city. They are required to make a $4 million contribution based on the education value. And looking at my schedule, they have declining property value, so they're required to make the full $4 million on the current year property value.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Goodison.
Thank you. Eddie, we've got at least two and maybe more large school districts that actually have had a decrease in student population. And it seems to me that's making some anomalies in their funding formula for them. Can you discuss that with me for a bit?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Dyson, I believe what you're referring to is places like the Kenai that has a declining enrollment.
And Anchorage.
And Anchorage. Currently, there is not a mechanism in the foundation program to provide a hold harmless or a transition for districts that are experiencing declining enrollment. I have drafted language that would address that problem. I've provided it to a number of legislators over the past couple of years. I have it. I'd be happy to share it with anybody that's interested in looking at that and maybe introducing legislation to get that into the foundation formula. But I think we do need to go down that road.
And
please proceed.
Are there other large districts besides Anchorage that are not paying the full local contribution?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, right now, based on the 07 budgets, the only district that I have at the cap is the Juneau School District. But it's my understanding that the Kenai School District is going back to their borough assembly to ask for the additional funds to get them to the cap. But basically, every municipality other than those two is below their cap to some degree.
Thank you.
And I have schedules I'd be happy to share with you on that.
Yeah, I would enjoy that. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dyson. The last question from Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, that's quite a formula anyhow. And I hope the special needs student explanation is a little simpler than that. I had a similar question to Senator Stedman's, a similar concern anyhow, but also I think he covered that well. But the other concern that I have is about the effect of the school size adjustment on charter schools. We have the F.E. Cochran School in Fairbanks, and there are now about 120 students. And my understanding is when it dropped from 150 to 149, that would cut the funding dramatically, pay about 84% of the kids. So the effect is that the school district lost about $500,000, I believe, in that respect. You may not be familiar with that specific instance. And I'm interested in how we might do something to make some kind of adjustment to help with that situation, because it is an innovative school, and it is, I think, beneficial to the community. And it worries me that a school like that may end up closing, actually, because of the loss of funding.
Through this chair, Senator Thomas, you've done your homework well. I am familiar with that school and the struggles that it's having. The 150 student threshold was set in after Senate Bill 36 passed. The threshold for charter schools was at 200. The legislature felt that was too high, came in and addressed that. In fact, Senator Dyson may have been one of the prime sponsors of that effort. But there again, that's a policy call on the legislature's part on what level that should be set at. I would encourage you to think about going too low, because you don't want to be in a situation where you're encouraging larger municipal school districts to create charter schools of small students for the benefit of generating additional dollars. So there is a trade-off there, and it's trying to find what the right number is.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Thomas. Thank you, Mr. Jeans, for your presentation. Just in closing, next week's schedule, we have on Monday, February 12th, the committee will continue its work on the Senate Bill 19 and 20 with ethics. On Wednesday, February 14th, we'll have a presentation from the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. And on Thursday, the 15th, we'll continue the review and update on the status of the PERS and TERS. With that, we're adjourned.